everybody. Welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. We're talking about part two of is this the Axeman come episode?
Yeah.
Is this one still?
No. Okay. Well, I mean.
No, this is the day. Sorry, right. Yeah. The one before.
Sorry. The Axeman does come, but
yeah, the Axeman does come.
Factually correct.
Sorry, I should have been more specific. The episode titled "The Axeman Cometh," not the episode where the Axeman cometh.
Right.
Yeah. No, well, it's the dead. You know.
We're not with him the whole episode last time, so maybe.
Oh, you know what? That's true. He did get up to a lot of stuff off screen that we weren't privy to. So who knows? He might have in the last episode. He got an apartment, so.
I love my fingers and playing on the saxophone.
Skip-bop-a-doodly-bop.
I mean,
skip it up.
If I had
he
been
goes weird, he goes like nasty man voice in the back half of this episode. I can't wait to talk about it because for some reason he just starts going into like a for like the entire back half.
It's like they forgot, or it's like he wanted to, like, the actor really wanted to ham up him being like, I'm a nasty little jazz man. And like the director was like, no. And then there were some scenes where, like, they just couldn't get him to stop doing it. So they're like, whatever, man.
I like to imagine it was a case of, like, when they first were like, okay, you need to be a nasty jazz man. He was like, okay, I got it. And then just, like, full on did, like, Gollum from Lord of the Rings. He was like, jeez. And they're like, too much. Back it up. And they just had to spend, like, an entire day be like, come on, man, less. And then eventually he's like, ooh, I just love watching you and your little kid and I want to sleep with you. And they're like, okay, close enough. Whatever.
They're like, whatever, weirdo.
Last time. First of all, hey everybody, I'm Ty Tuesday. Joining me is Miss Shadow Lovely and Slow Beef. Hey gang, we should do introductions, I guess.
Hey.
Just in case. It's part
they
two,
know. They know.
They're already here for 2 minutes, Axeman come. They know what they're in for. last time we finished up on the post-coital bliss of Fiona getting mad at the Axeman. Because he does give, or no, this is before he does the weird thing, right? This is just like, he was like, I'm so good at fingering. And then they have sex and blow up the lights. Right. He hasn't, I mean, he already went full weird, but he's going to go more weird.
It's going to get weirder. I don't know if I'm going to love it. You're going to hear about it. I don't know if you're going to love it.
Depends on what you're here for.
Yeah. She like blew up the lights with, they weren't even having sex. Like, they were like, maybe he is that good at fingering and he made her like blow up the lights or whatever, but like they treat it like it's normal. He's like, that's normal, this is fine. And unfortunately that's the more normal thing about this episode, because we ended this episode before the scene that I forgot existed. So I've titled in the notes this scene in our notes, I usually give each scene like a little summary name so that we know where we are in the episode. This one's just God Damn It. It's the name of the scene.
Appropriately, I might add.
Yeah. Because I forgot. It's less that I forgot and incredibly more likely that I fully repressed it on purpose. I forgot this happens, and I wish that I didn't have to see it again with my own two eyes. If you're watching along with us, I'm sorry that you had to watch it with your own two eyes.
So it opens up with Zoe is teaching Kyle to talk, because nothing is more indicative of someone's mental age than you like trying to teach them how to speak with flashcards,
right.
And stuff, and having them just kind of babble back at you. For sure. That's someone with all their faculties who is a adult for all intents and purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, Kyle also agrees it sucks and smacks the flashcards out of her hands because he's clearly going through something way more severe and can't express it. And Zoe has decided, instead of trying to find that out or work with him or help him in a meaningful way, to be like, this is banana. And so he slaps it out and he's like, no. And yeah, so he starts hooting, hollering. Madison walks in and is just like, yo, who that? And explains like, that's one of the guys you killed on the bus. Which, yeah, like, that's not really, like, I get you blame Madison because she did flip the bus. But also, like, As you have put so eloquently in the notes, it's a rapist bus. So, like, flip that bitch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, maybe Kyle... Well, I would say maybe Kyle shouldn't have been on the rapist bus, but, like, I guess he did get dragged into it. I mean, at the same time, maybe he shouldn't have been at the rapist party. There's a lot of maybes that go into how Kyle ended up on the bus. Because the flashbacks we see, like, it's implied... In episode one, when it happens, that, like, Kyle's, like, a new pledge or whatever, and, like, maybe right. doesn't know these guys. But we see flashbacks where he's, like, with them as they get tattoos and whatnot, and they're being yeah. actively shitty then. So it's not like he's completely... And, like, when he's giving the little speech, when we first meet Kyle, he's giving a speech about, like, all right, I know you all have a proclivity for being an asshole when you're drunk. No peeing in public and getting arrested, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
Like, they try to play it as, like, Kyle being, like, he's trying to save all of them. But, like, as somebody who went through college and has known the friend who was, like, the person who stuck along and was like, hey, guys, let's not go too crazy. That's not a hero. That's somebody who just needs to find a different group of fucking friends. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, like, there's something to be said about, like, I mean, I say there's something to be said. We've said it nearly every goddamn episode of, does Zoe really even know that Kyle was, like, a good guy? Like, we're supposed to be, like, led to believe that, like, oh, no, Kyle was a really good boy. He wanted to be an engineer or whatever. And also, like, he has a traumatic past or something.
God, what a fucking, sorry, as a trained and degreed engineer, what a stupid job to give him to have him be, like, a hero. Come on. Like, at least be, like, a doctor or something. Like, come on. I was a medical engineer. We're not heroic.
Yeah,
but, I can't.
You know what? The thing is, though, this is, again, American Horror Story. They have to, like, incorporate real life things and everything. And what was going on in New Orleans? Hurricane Katrina. So it's like, that's you why. Know.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. So that's, like, their whole little thing here. But it's bullshit. So whatever.
Old context slow beef at it again.
No, but, like, well, you know, it's like there's a lot of people there, like, too, you could have leaned on. There are a lot of first responders. There are a lot of people who are, like, helping during that whole thing. So you had a lot of options other than, like, guy who wants to rebuild the levees. So it's...
I'm going to build a big dam.
Yeah.
Also, like, this was filmed in, like, 2012 or something. Like, even at that point, like... By the time he gets to be what he says he wants to be, I reckon they've probably already rebuilt him.
I reckon
they've already dealt with it. He probably doesn't need to help anymore. It's probably too late.
Yeah, I mean, without getting into it, there's a lot of better options if you actually give a shit about what happened and not just like, hey, I want to mention the hurricane and have this be like somewhat topical, but I don't want to get too into it because like actually... The thing that Kyle says is like, well, the Army Corps of Engineers did a bad job, which, okay, fair, but also that's the group I think that ended up fixing it too, because they came in the emergency for it and everything. So it's like, there's a little more to this, Kyle, that like, before you spend your whole life on this, maybe you'd like to do some research on it, you know, whatever. So,
yeah, I feel like you hit the nail on the head. I feel like having him want to be like a paramedic or a first responder or like part of the mm-hmm. Coast Guard or. Anything like that would have been more noble, quote unquote, than like
heroic. Yeah, like
rebuilding like the lower ninth ward. Any does. Of that? Sorry.
Oh, just like anyone who does heroic acts, like every day, right? Like that's like an EMS is the classic job of like you just save people every day, right? Like in theory, at least.
Mm-hmm.
So, going with engineer over that. You know, the thing is, maybe like long term does save more lives, but also, yeah, not heroic. A lot of very quiet nights behind a desk. You mm-hmm. know?
It is just very odd that that's what they landed on to be like, here's all. And also, like, I've always hated it's a very lazy is not really the right word, but it's the only word I can think of at the time. It's always a very lazy writing device when they're like, we need the audience to know that this character that gets a very minimal build up because of one reason or another, like they can't talk or something happens, like you become a zombie or whatever.
He to dies give them in the backstory, first episode, right?
Yeah, we need to give this person backstory that makes the audience care about them, but we like don't have a way to do that because they can't actively do something heroic, so they give them trauma instead, and they're like, this character's really traumatized. You should feel bad for them. That means they're a good person. And I'm like,
You know, this happens a lot in, like, the Metal Gear games, where it's like you kill a boss, and then it's like, hey, as I'm dying, I just want to tell you about my backstory, what an asshole you are for killing me after the fact. It's like, oh, thanks.
Metal Gear Rising got so good, because since people were androids, you'd literally, like, cut them into segments, and then they'd call you on the phone and be like, so I'm, like, in 100 pieces or whatever, but here's what I think about war.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, they'd bleed out, and it's like, Snake, do you remember when your government, like, betrayed me? Like, wait, aren't you dead? Didn't I blow you up with mines? Like, whatever. And then, but
people
here,
went to the moon, Snake.
Oh no, Metal Gear Rising.
Well, either way, so Madison ends up walking in and like walks in, and I think Zoe leaves before Madison walks in, I think, or like right at the same time or something.
Yeah, because they have that weird little terse exchange.
Right, right. And then, yeah, it's Madison's just, like, kind of nice and tries to relate to Kyle and, like, kind of has a moment of, like, hey, you died and came back and are, like, struggling with that. Me too. I can still talk. It's unclear why. But you know what? You're struggling with this a lot, and I can be a mouthpiece, and I'm also struggling. It's just, like, a moment of compassion and caring and trying to empathize with the other party's plight that Zoe has never partaken in.
Why doesn't she have him take some of Delia's like potions or plants or whatever too? You know, it worked for me. It's just like, you know, I never.
Zoe very much so has, and this is like, I forgot to note this, but like I had this epiphany after I watched the episode. Zoe very much has this like idea, and we'll see it in something else she'll do later in the episode too, of like, Zoe is very acutely aware of problems, especially ones that are, like, explicitly her fault or, like, related to her in some way. And instead of, like, wanting the correct answer, she wants to do the Zoe answer for some reason. Like, she doesn't want
to... going to kill Spalding.
Yeah. Like, she doesn't have, like, reason behind most of the things she does. She's just like, the vibes. I'm doing it on based on Zoe vibes. And that may be good for the other person, but it probably won't be. Because, I mean, like, it could be argued that even the reviving of Kyle, because, like, yeah, Madison instigated it, but she was doing it as a quote-unquote, like, solid for Zoe because Zoe wouldn't shut the fuck up about Kyle dying. And, like, Madison felt, like, a little bad that a guy who may not have been awful got caught up with the awful dudes who ended up dying. But, like, if Zoe really thought it was a bad idea, she could have just been like, actually, I'm not finishing this ritual. Like, we're not going all the way through with this. We're not going to actually make a zombie Frankenstein boyfriend. But, like, she lets it happen, and she participates in the ritual. And then afterwards, and she takes full, by the way, takes full credit for reviving both Madison and Kyle, which she had nothing to do with. She's like, I revived both of you. I'm like, you didn't revive either of them.
Well, technically, she was like, please, you know, and then like, she got her to do it, but
she didn't beg. Right. She didn't beg for Misty to do it.
Right, right.
Zoe's going to like trick people into thinking she's the supreme purely by like stealing credit, which is like kind of badass. Very like
stolen
very
valor.
Silicon Valley of her. Yeah.
Yeah, stolen valor supreme.
Stolen witch that, valor, yes.
God, that would be such a funny. That would be such a funny like plot line. I may have repressed it, but I don't remember anything like that happening.
Hi, do I get a dollar off at Applebee's for being a witch? Here's my card.
Oh my god, but see like that's a joke, but it's so in character for Zoe, especially like as this episode progresses, like she gets this like weird ego about, well, she kind of got it in the last one when she's like, we're the most powerful people in the world or whatever. Yeah, the adults never help us and now we're all dying, like we're so powerful. I'm like, you have demon coochie, like yeah, you might have killed some zombies with a chainsaw, but so does Ash Williams and he's not a witch, so like who's the real...
He doesn't have a coochie at all, as far as I know.
Yeah, well, as far as I know. I haven't done any further research, but I don't know.
The movie doesn't have a high enough rating. You
yeah,
know.
That's true. But yeah, like, at multiple points in this episode, Zoe herself will take credit for both reviving Kyle and reviving Madison. And I'm like, you were like present for both of them, but you are not the catalyst for either of them getting revived. Because that is really stolen witch valor, being like, I used this power that I don't have to bring you back to life. When we were, or like, we work in a system, a magical school system, no pun intended, where it is highly sought after to have multiple powers, because that's means you might be the next supreme or whatever.
Right.
It like means something if you have multiple powers. So
when
to like
you,
pretend
when you have
you
the
don't.
Mega Man stuff going, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. You really don't want to be like pretending you have powers you don't, because I feel like, especially there will be like checks and balances that will come up in future episodes. That are specifically to test to see if you are bullshitting about having said powers or having said abilities. You don't really want to be making that shit up. I don't know that there's like a real huge punishment for doing it. It's just like it kind of throws off the, it's like an honor system and you're kind of throwing the whole thing off. It's just weird. They're like, they actually do like have reason for characters to not want to have stolen witch valor in the show that be based on their own universe, and then they just
right.
have her do it anyway. nothing comes of it. They just have her do it, which is really weird. But yeah, so like they have this, like Madison and Zoe have this like kind of terse interaction where like Zoe's like weirdly aggressive towards Madison, like, yeah, he's dead because you killed him and then I brought him back. I'm like, that's not how that happened at all, but whatever, go off. Like simultaneously blaming Madison for like both things while also taking credit for the thing Madison did. Very odd. And then when they're having their little discussion, Madison and Kyle, it is kind of like, it's, I won't say it's like a good scene, it's not a good scene, I hate this scene, but like Madison, who has been very, like, cold and standoffish and very bitchy, like, that's her whole character. She's, like, a very mm-hmm. shallow, narcissistic actress.
Right.
Is, like, very, like, humble and, like, sweet to Kyle and is, like, nice to him. And, like, there's a little bit of chemistry between them. And I have to imagine it's because these two actors were dating at the time, because they were dating at the time.
Oh, no kidding. I had no idea. Interesting.
Yeah. I think they were actually engaged at the time that this season happened. So I guess that makes a little more sense why these two have infinitely more chemistry between them than Zoe and Kyle or Violet and Tate ever have ever on screen in any of the seasons they've been together.
Zoe, when like a log walks up and then tries to talk to a wall that just screams.
Yeah.
That's not chemistry to you.
Yeah, the show thinks it is, though, and they really want us to root for these two. Because I will die on the hill that the only reason the Zoe Kyle plotline exists is because they wanted people to associate it with Violet and Tate. Because they, again, mm-hmm. they do not make these two characters. Everybody else in the show looks wildly different than any other character they've ever played, but not these two. They are identical to their season one characters, like
they met once at a party, and you know, we're introduced to Zoe like having like sex with her boyfriend like as it started this, so it's not like she's like one of those people who like never knew love or something, or if that's like more to it, that's certainly not introduced, but it's just like she's like, I feel like she's experienced enough to be like, I could get over this guy I met all of like an hour or two whose friends are not the best people. Like, even that alone, like, not to be like all guilt by association, but that alone would make, like, her, I would think, like, even second guess, like, maybe this guy wasn't, like, all I thought he was or whatever, but, you know.
Oh, yeah, people write off, like, potential partners for less. Like, oh, this dude's, like, shoes are weird, or, like, he gave me weird vibes when he was texting, or, like,
yeah.
Like, people write off other people for, like, way less than, oh, he's friends with a bunch of rapists. Like, the guy I talked to for 15 minutes hangs out with a bunch of face-eating leopards. Like, yeah, I don't...
Dog, I swipe left if somebody has Harry Potter in their profile.
Yeah, like, there is no reason why Zoe is, like, should be going to bat for this dude who has a lot of red flags, if we're being honest. And also, like, again, going back to like they being the show shows us like, oh, well, you should feel bad for Kyle because he was traumatized as a kid and as an adult because his mom or whatever. But like Zoe doesn't know that. Only we know that. Zoe doesn't know what his mom did. Like, she doesn't even know he wanted to be an engineer, and that's why he's a hero. That's why he's a goddamn hero. So, like, Zoe doesn't even have the information that we're supposed to be using as reference for why Kyle's a good person. All she knows is that, like, he was cordial to her for 15 minutes at a house party. And she's like, well, yeah. I guess he's my responsibility for the rest of my life now. But yeah, so just keep that interaction in mind, and we're going to table it for now and move on to the next scene. When we come back to it, it will be infinitely worse. It's now time for Queenie's subplot. So Queenie goes to see Marie Laveau, and it's, like, not super clear why she... I guess it's because she's having, like, second... It's really not clear, because she just, like, does it, like, arbitrarily. I guess it's because of, like, the statement that... Delphine said about her being black and the witches not, like, trusting her because of that. But, like, her going to Marie Laveau, A, how does she know where Marie Laveau is? And B, like, I don't know. I feel like there has been enough of a history between these two schools of magic that, like, your first thought wouldn't be, I'm gonna go to the rival school that keeps trying to kill
us. There's, like, other black people in New Orleans.
Yeah.
A couple.
There's, like, more than one.
And I bet if you look hard enough, more than one that does magic, even. Like, you could probably find other people. Like, you don't have to go to the one that is actually trying to kill you.
If she's the queen of voodoo, there's got
to
be some servants of voodoo, right? Like, that's how it plays out.
A really famous queen of voodoo, I might add. Like, she shouldn't be going by her actual name in a way, too. Like, she has shops named after her and shit in the real city. Whatever, anyway.
You would think that maybe she'd have, like, I don't know, more people coming to see her not to get their hair done. They'd be like, oh, shit, that's her. That's the lady. But no one ever does. And she's making gumbo, she being Marie, not Queenie. Like, it's a whole production. Like, the whole shop's doing it. And then Queenie says she's never had gumbo.
What? Marie, skill issue.
Yeah.
Skill issue in New Orleans. Yeah.
Extremely skill issue. Like, Marie's like, oh, it's because you were the White Witches. I'm like, no, this is Queenie's fault, actually. You live in New Orleans.
Gumbo is a side.
It's so ridiculous. All of it, dude. It just sort of like, now, by the way, would you also like some king cake? Like, you know, like, stop it. Like, I know why you're doing it, but, like.
And also some jerk chicken, because we don't know what they serve in New Orleans besides gumbo, so we've accidentally called blackened chicken jerk chicken. Would you like some jerk chicken?
By the way, they have Marie Laveau, like, do a little bit about racism, of just, like, Queenie being like, I've never had gumbo, and she's like, yeah, I bet you haven't. They probably have you eaten shaken bacon watermelon for dessert, as, like, a, you know, a racist thing, but it's like, you did introduce the scene with gumbo. you didn't do much better, American Horror Story, right? Like, I know that's, like, a real thing, but, like, you could have, you know, it's like you said with the king cake thing, like, don't highlight it. Don't be like, look, we didn't do it, when it's like, you kind of did.
Yeah.
You can't do it, like, in the quote-unquote good way and want us to, like, applaud you for it, American Horror Story.
Well, it's wacky, too, because it is just sort of like, look, see, New Orleans, we know what we're talking about. Hey, Queenie, would you like some beignets? And it's like, yeah, but you didn't even do, like, more than a minute on the Hurricane Katrina thing. Like, I want to fix a levee. Like, just ask somebody who lives there. Like, you know, I'm acting like an expert because I have a friend who lives there, so I'm not an expert, but I know, like, more than this, you know?
There's other ways they could have even made it, like, if they were, like, so determined to make this a plot point, or, like, at least an interaction, they could have done other things with it, like, have it mentioned, like, oh, you came here and you wanted to get your hair done because no one there knows how to do your hair or whatever. Like, that, believable. No one in the Robichaux house has any idea, anything close to that. And Marie owns a hair salon. Like, that would be a natural, organic way to be like, hey, here's something, like, human that I can provide for you that you wouldn't find at the Robichaux house. Not being able to get gumbo in New Orleans is 100% a Queenie issue. That is not a Robichaux house issue.
I also feel like this shouldn't necessarily be their first conversation. You know, like, witches are relatively rare or magic users, I guess, and the Robichaud house knows about the Laveau and vice versa. So, like, you know what I mean? Like neither of them reached out to the other before this, you know, like, ever? Like,
also,
you know,
it's like...
Well, literally, as Queenie walks in, Marie Laveau's like, come on, stop standing behind the door, Queenie, walk in. And she's like, how do you know who I am? She's like, a black witch comes to my area. I'm aware, Queenie. So, like, they fully are aware of who each other is.
Right,
so,
yeah.
Like, yeah, it's a very weird and, like... To kind of quickly move through it a little bit, Marie is just very upset that Delphine is out of the ground, which, like, fair. Queenie is like, well, it's cool. She's my slave. And Marie Laveau is like, that is not good enough. Do you know what that woman did? You know what? Fuck it. You ask her what she did. Let her tell you. And then, you know, she's just like, well, if you do want to join me, just bring over Madame Delphine and I'll let you ride on in. Queenie responds with a quick, like, hey, I never said I wanted to join, which, like, you did come over. Another
right.
small weird note. They mentioned that this is breaking the truce at some point. She's like, you wouldn't break a truce for no gumbo. And I'm just sitting here like, is it a restraining order? Like, how is it? Usually a truce is like, we will not take aggravated warlike actions against each other. Not like, I won't wave to you ever. Like, that's a restraining order. That's a different thing.
Also, like, one thing I was going to mention is it doesn't really, like, explain, but there is kind of a clearly defined, and it's not really clear because we don't know where the voodoo house people came from, but, like, there appears to be a distinction between Queenie being a descendant of Tituba and having magical powers and... the voodoo house of magic. Like, they appear to not be the same. So, like, even if Queenie were to join voodoo house, she wouldn't be the same, if that makes sense. Like, they're not the same. All of the voodoo practitioners have to do, like, these very elaborate rituals in order to summon magic. It's like the difference between, like, a warlock and a wizard in D&D. So
one,
like,
needs prep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Queenie just innately has the power of pain or of damage transference without having to do a spell or anything. She just innately has, like, a superpower. So, like, I don't know. I feel like there is a distinct, like, they make it this thing of, like, oh, well, you shouldn't be at that house because of race or whatever. But, like, she does have a different kind of magic. Like, she would not necessarily benefit from being at Voodoo House, even though they are similar. She doesn't have, like, a lot to gain, so to speak, because
okay.
she doesn't, like...
Counterpoint. The witch school hasn't taught her a goddamn thing.
True.
So if she learns anything, I feel like it's a step up.
But that's the other thing with the Robichaud house is it's almost like the girls don't have to learn anything because it's not like, I don't know, I've never seen Harry Potter, but I assume in Harry Potter they have to learn spells.
Yeah, you have to learn to do stuff. Any like, again, any, like, media where kids have some form of power or intrinsic ability and they need to go learn it at a school, they generally do the learning at the school part with a cast of, you know, an assorted, wild, wacky teachers and everything. Like, you get to draw staff now. That's the fun. And, again, American Horror Story has decided instead it's like, it's a big white house that girls talk in.
Yeah, it's the X-Men house. What it turns into is it turns into the X-Men Academy, where it's not really an academy. It's just a, here's where we hide people who have superpowers. That's literally all
it
is.
The X-Men Academy, they've got, like, the danger room and put them through scenarios and shit. Like, this is just nothing.
I think, like, Beast gives, like, a token lecture every, like, 1 year or two in, like, the comics or whatever, you know? Like, and so they even get that. This is literally just like, yeah, I don't know what the word school means. I'm sorry. Have some gumbo.
Like, no, don't know. So we don't serve gumbo at the Robichaud house.
Sorry, have some beignets.
Yeah.
So Marie makes, like, one last comment as she's leaving of just like, if you learn magic and voodoo, you'll be the strongest witch, which I'm like, she would be a voodoo practitioner with one extra ability, which is like
voodoo plus.
Pretty good. But I don't know about strongest witch.
I'm Voodoo Plus because I subclassed in Robichaud magic. So she's like, what is the benefit from this? And Marie obviously wants Delphine. You know, like, Queenie's, like, a little bit gun-shy because she did just get implicated in a murder of a witch, Myrtle, who, by the way, we have not seen because she's underground, I guess, marinating at,
Getting the mud in her. Yeah.
So, like, she's already a little gun-shy of, like, trusting authority figures to not implicate her in another murder of an innocent person, even though Delphine's not an innocent person, but this episode would want us to believe that she is. And Marie's like, Lamau, don't worry about it. What I do to her is not any of your business. Don't worry about it. Hee-hee, nudge-nudge, wink-wink. And Queenie in this scene is like, oh, discomfort with that. That will be completely irrelevant in a couple more scenes. But we see her having, like, severe drawback about, like, potentially being involved in this after already being involved in a murder, one episode ago. But don't worry about it. We'll get back to it. Now, it's time for a very confusing turn of events that I hate. I hate this point onward. This episode onward is really where this season started tanking for me.
So we get Cordelia and Zoe in Cordelia, I presume, because Cordelia's office. Cordelia starts walking in the room being like, you know, I was here all this time and looking around, and you get back at the hospital and you wonder, what were you doing? And I was wasting all this time, but it's really funny. It's a really funny joke that now I'm blind so I can actually see shit. And, Zoe's like, okay. And Cordelia sits down and just kind of runs through all of the things Zoe has claimed she's done recently, including summoning a ghost and then sending it packing, which, Cordelia, hun, if you only knew. has the most awkward, stilted delivery of, well, Zoe, I guess that makes you a real hot shit witch. And I think they just, like, the first couple times she read it, she said hot shit witch, and they were like, that sounds like a bad sandwich. You can't call her a hot shit witch. That's nothing.
Oh my God.
So they
had
to, like, they had to retake it a bunch until she was like, hot shit witch. Like, it's like whenever they say duck hunt in Smash Brothers, they have to make sure they don't say duck hunt. And just basically it's like, you revived somebody, you brought a ghost and you sent him packing. You're clearly, like, really on the up and up, AKA, you know, by way of witchery, at least according to what I've heard. Hey, as a heads up, make sure Fiona doesn't find out. What do you mean? If Fiona thinks you're the Supreme, she's going to kill you. That's ridiculous. Fiona's on our side. No, she killed Madison. I saw it. And to which, you know, Zoe just, well, that's crazy. No one knows who killed Madison. No, I saw it. I have the sight. See how, look at my face. I have the sight now.
Yeah, this is another Zoe thinking she knows better for some reason. And she's going to, like, act on thinking she knows better in just a minute, which is wild because in this case, she's just wrong. So it's just that, like, Zoe has a 100. It's not even that Zoe has a good intuition. It's that Zoe has a 100% rate of being told information and being like, no, actually, I've decided other information is true for literally no reason. And sometimes she's right. And sometimes she's not right, like in this case, because she has no reason not to believe Delia, like none. She has no, because the way that she's acting and the way that, like, some of the girls have, like, kind of acted is, like, they have some kind of allegiance towards Fiona. They just met Fiona. She just showed up. Most of them didn't even know she existed until she randomly showed up, like, a week ago and was like, I'm the Supreme.
Yeah, it's this whole thing where they act like the Supreme is just, like, an inherently known, understood, and worshipped religious figure or, like, grand figure of authority, which works if the character is presented as a grand figure of authority, but Fiona is generally presented as a fucking mess. occasionally a powerful mess, but a fucking mess. So it doesn't really work when you have somebody, like, stumbling in hungover at 4:30 a.m. and everyone being like, oh, the Supreme. It doesn't really play out.
And even when she, like, showed up at the school, none of them were like, holy shit, is that the Supreme? So she doesn't have, like, this overwhelming presence. They were like, who the fuck is this lady? Like, I think Queenie even says that. She's like, who's this old white lady? Like, nobody even knew who she was when she came into the house. Yeah, it's very odd that they would have any modicum of, like, trusting Fiona. Because Fiona hasn't even, like, protected them from anything. Like, nothing has happened in which they'd be like, yeah, Fiona has our best interests at heart. Like, really, Fiona hasn't done anything. Since Fiona showed up, Delia got blinded. Madison got killed. They had to kill Myrtle for, like, allegedly trying to, like, start a coup or whatever. Like, Fiona hasn't done anything beneficial for the school since she showed up, and yet for some reason they question this.
You think that would be a moment of like, hey, yeah, she got Myrtle killed, I'm claiming she killed Madison, and also she's responsible for these three other things, and that would be a moment of Zoe being like, oh, right. But no, instead she goes, I don't know, and then eventually she turns and goes, okay, then what are we going to do about it if you think Fiona's just going to go around killing young witches until we're out of them? And Cordelia again responds with a line that I think is supposed to be really hard, but it would just be so much harder if instead of saying, we'll kill her once, kill her good, kill her dead, instead if she was just like, we're going to kill her, Zoe. We're going to kill her.
It is the most,
I think we're
like,
going to have to kill this guy, Zoe.
Damn it. Yeah, literally. It's if she had just been like, we're going to kill my mother, would have been infinitely harder than her being like, kill her once, kill her good, kill her dead. Because that, it so badly reads as like Delia practiced that for like an hour in the mirror before Zoe showed up. Like, she's been waiting so long to drop that line. She's had it like ruminating in her mind, like, it's gonna be so cool when I say it, it's gonna make me seem so cool. It's like, very few things make me physically cringe in real life that
one-liners. Overwritten one-liners are like kind of a hallmark of this show too. Like, every so often you'll have a scene that's really good and then some asshole leans in from off screen and says some shit that makes you go like, shut up.
Yeah, and as if that wasn't bad enough, now it's time for the worst scene.
Zoe walks in on Madison and Kyle having zombie sex. I figured I'd just sing it to make it easier to slide into. Zoe walks in on Madison and Kyle having zombie sex. And by that, I mean Kyle lifting Madison like against a cabinet and like going ham. Like, this is not like a passive or like Madison sleep. They wanted to make sure you know, like, Kyle's driving this fucking car.
And it's as awkward as you think it is. If you're thinking like, well, that's got to be kind of weird, make it worse in your mind, actually. Like, dial the weird awkwardness up. And if you think that's bad, it's not even the worst that it's going to be yet. Don't you worry. We still got like 15 minutes left of this episode. It's going to get so much worse. Now, we're already uncomfortable. Let's get more uncomfortable with the Axeman, I think.
So this is where the Axeman, if you're watching this show at home, I don't blame you for turning captions on for this portion, because he gets so lost in his fucking grumble that there are moments where I'm like, what did he just, what the fuck did he just say? Because he's just like, I'm your daughter, I never heard. And you're just like, what? What was that, dude? So Fiona's trying to eventually get away from Axeman, just like, okay, that was fun, but I'm gonna go. Mentions the dead body in the bathtub, and like, yeah, they just have a very exchange where at the end of it she goes, I don't even know who you are or what your name is, which, weird for the witch with the ability to read minds and simply know things and simply perceive information. And then, so apparently the dead body in the bathtub wasn't enough to be like, I'm gonna go. And so she mentions, I don't even know your name, to which he responds, I know everything about you. I've been watching you since you were 8 years old. Which, like,
whoa.
Bro. There's nothing more famously creepy. You know what? That's generally, like, you didn't interact with her, so I know it's not grooming, but, like, that's, like, it's grooming behavior.
Yeah, absolutely.
And don't worry. He's going to justify it, and the justification makes it so much worse.
So much worse.
The way he starts to describe it makes it as if that's not creepy enough, he's going to make it so much creepier. Because we get a flashback of, like, 8-year-old Fiona getting bullied at witch school or whatever. And, like, I don't even know if she's a teacher, but, like, an older witch is, like, making her drink milk or something. I don't even know. And
She was getting... So what it was there was a witch walking by knocking over everyone's glasses of milk and then goes to knock over Fiona's and it doesn't. And then, you know, like, it's like... witches who stick their heads above ground get cut off to, you know, gets a quick, like, I'm not afraid of you, tries to force her to pour a glass of milk over her own head. Fiona throws it at her. And then the bigger witch casts the most powerful spell of all, which is tackle. Look at Chuck in football. Just tackles Fiona to the ground, stands up. The rest of the class starts laughing, which it's like, you'd be laughing at the big witch, right? The one who, like, tried to do a own yourself spell and got God and had to go tackle a tiny child because they were so owned.
You'd think.
But apparently that's not the case. She stands up, starts to walk away, and a bookcase just falls on her and absolutely dunks the hell out of her. We cut back and the Axeman goes, that was me. I threw a bookcase on a girl. Are you happy? And Fiona's like, everyone blamed me for that. And I knew I didn't do it. So, like, no, not actually a big fan of that.
And then we, like, get, like, a later flashback, like, where she's older. She's, like, I guess becoming an adult or, like, is a late teenager. And, like, it's when we first meet her back before she kills the Supreme.
Right.
So she's, like, a hot, blonde, bitchy lady now. And then he's like, at first I saw you as the daughter that I never had. And I'm like, fucking gross. And then he's like, and then I wanted to bang you. And then I'm like, that's
Liz,
so much worse.
Your version of the grumbly jazz man is so good. Sorry, I'm just, whoo, if you could just keep reading those lines, that's fantastic.
Oh, if only there was more. But, like, that was it. That was the whole justification. He literally just says,
sorry.
I saw you as the daughter I never had, and then I wanted to bang you. Like, that's all he says.
The way he phrases it at the end, let me dig into my mind palace here. Right, that's what it was. It was, well, first I saw you as a daughter, and I realized I loved you, but, like, less as a father and more as a man. And it was like,
That's
you can't go from loving someone as a father to loving someone as a man. That's bad. We don't do that in society.
Yeah, and he's saying it like this is like, he's like, no, this is good. This is why you shouldn't be scared of me. This is a good thing. And it's presented in the show like we're also supposed to think that. And I'm like, no, this actually makes it so much worse. Like, if they had just been like, oh yeah, like, I watched, like, I noticed you when you, like, started getting powerful and were the Supreme, and then I was attracted to that power.
It also,
that was, like, that's still weird, but, like, it's not nearly as weird as this.
It also is definitely worse that we have multiple cuts to him at different parts of her life with her just, like, getting dressed, undressed, or sleeping. You know, the three famous places that women love to be watched. And is just sitting in chairs with his legs out and his hands behind his head like the biggest fucking pervert I've ever seen. And he's just, it's like him just eating shit, grinning in the corner, watching a lady get undressed where she doesn't know he's watching her. Which is like, this isn't good, man. This isn't selling your brand. You're scaring the bitches, jazz man. Stop it.
Can you, like, sue for libel on someone else's behalf? Because, again, Axeman's a real guy. So I have to imagine, like, if his ghost was around, be like, I just killed people who didn't play jazz, all right? I didn't do all this shit.
He's like, he's doing, like, the cutting the neck hand symbol, like, hey, cut that shit out. I was just a tool of the devil or whatever who liked jazz. Like, I wasn't a fucking weirdo. Like,
what
relax.
The hell is, right? Yeah, like, what the hell is all this?
I was a serial killer, not some fucking freak.
I only killed people who didn't like jazz music. I was reasonable, okay? I had my reasons. I wasn't a fucking freak. Oh my god. You know who else is, anyway, Fiona slaps him and walks out of the room.
So they go for one more kiss. Fiona slaps him and is like, you think that's seduction? Get out of here, weirdo. Which it's like, okay, good, but you should have probably gotten on that a bit earlier. But That's neither here nor there.
She's like, serial killing's okay. I draw the line at you watching me as a child. I draw the line at that.
Yeah, so we hard cut to Spalding in a clown suit tied to a bed, immediately making noise, to which he has to the actor's credit, has a pretty good response to, like, wait, I made a noise. Oh, fuck. Uh-oh. Zoe is standing over him. He's tied to a bed and just explains, like, hey, I found a tongue in a box. Isn't that crazy? I put it in your mouth. Do you like it? <It's> like, explains, like, yeah, I found a box. It was, I assumed the tongue would be a little piece of jerky, but no, it was fresh and new and tasty. So thanks, Myrtle. Great job on the enchantment, I guess. It also has a preservative effect. You also get lightly pickled when you can only tell the truth.
It doesn't explain it. She says that Myrtle kept his tongue, and I'm like, okay, how did that conversation go down? Like, did she just swipe it off the floor like a little goblin when they found, like, it on the ground and Spalding screaming? She's like, oh, mine now. Like, how did that go down?
Yeah, he cut it off alone, right? Like, he was on his own in the bathroom or whatever.
I mean, he was with Fiona. And she starts screaming because she didn't expect him to do that. And that's what draws everybody's attention. But, like, it wasn't, like, a planned event. And, like, you'd think that, like, they would just clear the girls out of the room and, like, usher Spalding to a medical facility to, like, get care. It would be a little weird. Like, I don't know what I would do in that situation, like, being a bystander. Yeah, not yoink the tongue. I wouldn't, like, be like, mine now. Like, okay, you weirdo.
I put it in a little box and hid it in the walls.
Is what Myrtle did.
Maybe it's good we burned Myrtle, actually.
Yeah. It's seeming that way more and more every episode. So... Zoe starts, you know, interrogating him and, you know, trying to get him to admit who killed Madison. And he, like, tries to, like, do weird half-truth thing, which, like, bad enchantment, Myrtle. Do better next time. C+. And then finally, like, asks him who killed Madison. Say the name of who killed Madison. And they have him do the funniest, like, resisting a curse I've ever seen, where he's, like, bouncing around on a bed, like, it's like super comical, and he just starts screaming, like, I'll say it over and over again, Fiona, I'll yell your name from the mountaintops, which... Okay, so confirmation now. In case for some reason you didn't trust the lady who got the sight of truth. In case you were just like, yeah, maybe she was off base with this one. I'll double check. now Zoe knows who killed Madison, knows it's not Spalding, know that Spalding was probably involved in almost no violence other than being a really weird guy with Madison's body. Nothing actually, like, you know, that's really worth killing him over or anything. So Zoe kills him.
Stabs the fuck out of him. Just, like, brutally stabs him. Like, all right, now you're done. I'm like, wait, why is he done? Why? He didn't do anything. Because, like, just in case there's, like, a little bit of conflation and you guys don't remember from a few episodes ago, he was fully lying about the necrophilia thing. That was just some bullshit lie he was thinking so Nan wouldn't be able to, like, get the truth out of him. He wasn't a necrophiliac. Like, he was weird and he was hanging out with dolls and, like, treating Madison's body as, like, a doll. But he wasn't, like, being weird and evil with it. He's just a weirdo.
Don't kink shame. Yeah. This is a good spot to not kink shame. Yeah.
Yeah. He wasn't, like, evil. He's just weird and lonely.
Honestly, we should just buy him a couple mannequins, is what it seems like. And he'd be Gucci.
Or maybe just be nice to him. We maybe just need to be nice to him.
Let's not go crazy, Liz. it's like a wild year.
And she treats it like he did do the necrophilia and the murder. And stabs him with great malice. Like, I cannot overstate that she stabs him with, like, wicked intention. Like, she's like, you're fucking done now. Like, it is, like, in his face, like, you're done talking. And I'm like, why? Why are you done talking?
She stabs him like an addict who hasn't had a fix in, like, a week. Like, she, like, gets, like, crazy for it.
So now she's just done a murder. She's just done a murder for no reason, basically.
Out and out. Yeah, unquestionably a murder with genuinely no real motive. So, time to hit Queenie and Delphine back up. Let's see what they're doing.
No.
What? What?
No.
It's fine. They're having a cool time together.
No. Yeah.
So, they're hanging out, and Queenie asks Delphine, hey, what was the worst thing you ever did? And Delphine, who would not last two tribal councils on Survivor, just immediately goes, oh, here's a full notarized list of the worst things I've done. Which,
what's weird is, like, she doesn't even
optics
do that.
Delphine.
She just, like, picks a random thing. And, like, granted, we're about to get a whole sequence where she does a flashback of this awful thing she does. And it's a thing we have not seen her do. So it's also new news to us. And I'm like, yes, this is fucked up, weird, and evil. But, like, I don't know. We've seen you do worse things up until now, actually. Not necessarily, okay, they're not necessarily, like, worse, but, like, they're definitely lateral moves. Like, it's just weird that this is the one thing that you say is your regret, because she's like, this is my deepest regret. I'm like, this one? This is your deepest regret? You did, like, 900 other crimes. Why is this one the one that you have, like, on tap for when someone asks, hey, what's the worst thing you did?
It's almost like the writers are like, listen, if you see any scenes with them together at the fast food place or stuff, don't make sure not to like her. She's terrible. And it's kind of like, but you're doing that. And then they kind of just whisk away before you can, like, continue the conversation.
He tuxedo masks out of the room.
Yeah.
Like, my job here is done, but you didn't do anything. so the flashback we see is like her being served dinner by one of her slave girls. And she's like, oh, I heard you just had a baby. That's nice, isn't it? And, like, you can tell that, like, the husband and the slave girl obviously have something going on because he's, like, groping her under the table or whatever. And then she's like, oh, after dinner, why don't you come help me for bed or whatever? And she does. And then she's, like, putting on the blood face paste, which this is also, this pisses me off narratively because
yeah.
They're about to do the Vitch type thing where she's like, teehee, TLDR, this face paste is made of your baby or whatever. Which, like, okay, but you already introduced the blood face paste thing in episode one, and you said specifically it was made of the pancreases of the slaves you killed. So, like, you've introduced the blood face paste as being two different nefarious things, and that fucking irritates me. Like, now it's not even, like, the same thing. You've done the same gimmick twice and made it two different things, and you just, like, changed what it was to make it worse in this one.
What bugs me about it isn't really relevant at the moment, but will be relevant very soon, which is they've used Madame Delphine painting her face in the blood of, you know, the people she murdered, the slaves she killed, as, like, a grand symbol of her evil and everything she's done, and, like, you know, literally painting her face with the blood of slaves in a vain attempt to look younger. Like, emblematic of how lowly she thinks of these people and how terrible of a human being she is. Just absolutely an emblem of, you know, evil and of, like, the pinnacle of when you are the worst type of slave, or, you know, you're a slave owner who just kills wanton willy-nilly. It's just, this is a symbol, right? Like, they don't do this kind of thing multiple times without it being symbolic in some way, shape, or form. Just think what the worst thing they could possibly do with that symbol is, and, you know, brace. We got 5 minutes. Brace. Brace.
Yeah. So anyway, and then that girl, the slave girl whose baby she used as face paste, on top of all the other hundreds of slaves she did that to, I guess, kills herself, and she's like, that's my one regret, is that I made that one slave girl kill herself. And I'm like, that was it? Like, that's bad. I'll give you that. Like, it's bad that your husband knocked up one of your slaves, and then
you made a guy a bull.
Yeah, like, yeah, you made, right? A guy a bull. You even did fucked up stuff to your daughters. Like, you've been pretty awful, just in general to everybody.
The one thing, though.
Yeah, and she's like, no, making that girl kill herself was my biggest regret. I'm like, really? Really? That one was the biggest regret? Whatever, I guess. And then she says, like, the power of a friendship changed her or whatever, and now she's not like that anymore. Really, a what if Hitler had kept painting scenario mm-hmm. that American Horror Story has presented us with. I don't know real why. Yeah, again, cannot overstate enough times. Madame Delphine was a real lady who, I don't know that we have, like, documentation that she did the specific things that the character does in this show, but she did do things of that caliber. Like, we may not know the details, but she was actively torturing and murdering real people, and, like, for her own benefit and her own giggles, like, was a awful human being who was, like, the scum of the earth. But now she's a nice little old lady in American Horror Story who got changed because
all I needed was one person to be nice to me and then I wouldn't have been Hitler. It like, no, shut up.
The Whopper Jr. is what really made me a good person.
It was a really good Whopper Jr., like a really good one.
Thank you for the moral re-reckoning, Arby's.
This is just like classic American bullshit of like, here, taste a single glass of Coca-Cola with ice in it. And they're like, actually, I do want to salute the flag. And it's like, sick. Welcome to the team.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and so Delphine is like, I'm a sweet little old lady now because I have a black friend, and now I'm not racism anymore. And upstairs, Fiona is losing her hair because of the chemo, and she's like, fuck it, I'm just going to buzz it all off, which is like, it's like a moment where they remembered that Fiona had cancer again, and they're like, oh, what usually happens when you get cancer? Well, sometimes the chemo makes your hair fall out, so a lot of people just buzz their heads. If you've ever wondered why a lot of people with cancer don't have hair, that's why. Chemo will make your hair fall out, and a lot of times they just buzz their hair off to, like, save the trouble.
You can either deal with, like, having, like, weird patchy spots falling out and having, like, random hair falling everywhere and just, like, being constantly reminded of it. Or, yeah, just shave your head for a bit. Yeah,
and so she goes to do that, which is, like, a humanizing moment to remind us that she has cancer. And then she gets, and I'm not this funny. I'm not making this up. This is what happens. She gets, like, super horny. And is like, oh, well, now I'm not gonna buzz my hair off. It's such a weird scene. Like, she's, like, got the buzzer to, like, her head, to shave her head, and then she's like, oh, but I'm so horny, though. And then she just sets the buzzer down and then leaves. It's a really, really weird scene. And so she doesn't, shave her head, and also she's real horny. Anyway, Zoe is showering off all the Spalding blood. You would think we're done. We have two more really uncomfortable scenes. We've got like 4 minutes of show left, and we have two more scenes. This is one of them. I need everybody, if you're sitting down, maybe lay down for this one.
Like lay down on the ground, too. Not like a bunk bed or somewhere with a lot of potential energy due to gravity.
Yeah, just like take a nice laying position on the floor and like take a few deep centering breaths before we get here, because if you're not watching this, God bless you, because I have never been more uncomfortable with a scene of television in my life, and that's saying a lot. So Zoe's taking a shower, getting all the Spalding blood off of her, and Madison is like, hey, what's up? And just throws the curtain open and is like, hey, are you mad at me for having zombie sex with Kyle or whatever? And she's like, no, I brought you back. Why would I be mad about that? And Madison's like, cool, whatever. Get out of the shower. I have an idea. And she's like, what? And so Zoe's wrapped in a towel at this point, and she, being Madison, leads Zoe out of the bathroom to a waiting Kyle who's sitting on the bed with his shoes on. I would like to reiterate that his shoes stay on for the remainder of the scene. Madison's
shoes on for sex is for hiking or when you need to get away. Just for the record, that's when you keep your shoes on, is either you're hiking and you don't want to be standing on the bare ground, or it's somewhere where you might need to pull up and run.
Yeah.
You know?
Madison's like, yeah, I don't even remember the word she says, because at this point, as soon as the scene started happening, it all came flooding back to me like a terrible, terrible PTSD flashback. And my brain immediately shut off to, like, elevator music. So I don't remember exactly what Madison says, but she says something to the effect of, yeah, we can just do zombie poly. We can just be a, we can just all of us, we can all be in a relationship. We can just, two zombies and a witch that has ghost coochie. It's great that you have ghost coochie, because he can't die. So you can, like, Neither of us will die.
I didn't even think about that selling point. Jesus Christ.
Oh,
right?
No, it's a selling point. That's a part of it. They bring that up. I remember that.
Yeah, I forgot about it entirely. Again, much like you, as soon as like I saw her slowly leading her into the room with Kyle shirtless on the bed, my brain was just like, da na 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 na.
Yeah. And then we get like the worst scene of like the camera's under the bed and we see their two sets of feet, Madison and Zoe, approach the bed on either side of Kyle's feet, and then the towel hits the ground, and then their feet like rise up, and again Kyle has his shoes on, and this that makes it so much worse. And then,
it does, right? I don't even know why, but it does. Like it shouldn't matter that much, but it's like weird.
It continues to play to the he does not have the mental capacity to be being involved in this or being elected into a polycule. Perhaps because up to this point, we've seen multiple episodes of him acting like a toddler. So, yeah, that does make it worse. That's a great point,
right.
Mega Man.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's get the fuck out of this room. This shit sucks. Can't wait to come back to this next episode, but fuck that. Oh, right. There's still another one. Fuck. Oh, damn it. Okay, so.
Yeah.
Axeman's playing his axe. He's up there doing a thing, which I don't know how he already got a show lined up in New Orleans as a jazz musician. It feels like that'd be a little competition in that market, but he makes it happen. Makes it happen.
How does he even get a band? He just came back to play. Whatever, yeah.
So Fiona comes to see him because apparently her body had never made a light show like that before, I guess.
He's really good at fingering.
Incredibly good at fingering. Like, his sax actually like upper mid at best, but his sex, oh. So we just get a scene of Fiona like staring longingly at the jazz man. And then we cut to Queenie, who's bringing Delphine to Marie Laveau's salon under the guise of like, yeah, we're gonna get your hair done. You need to update that hairstyle, lady. Which, okay, which the problem here is this leads more into having Delphine be like, oh, that sounds fun. I would love to go with my adopted granddaughter to go get a haircut. This seems like a fun time. And it's like, look, Kathy Bates, I love you, babe. You gotta stop it. You gotta ease up on making this little lady charming. She was a monster.
Yeah.
Like, she was a monster. And yeah, they really play into this. This is the moment. This is like, as far as I can tell, the pinnacle of you are supposed to feel bad and empathetically bad towards one of history's greatest monsters.
Yeah.
Which like, no, man, I'm good. I don't have to give it to them. Especially a fictionalized version of him.
What if Hitler was just a little fella? What if he was just a little guy?
With a rock.
No, American Horror Story says that's bad. You should feel bad.
American Horror Story will also get hit with a rock if they stand in my way.
Oh, this is miserable. This episode is misery. Like, because I cannot overstate, like, the heel turn this does, because like, again, Delphine is like now presented as this sweet little old grandma who's like, I'm so excited to spend time with my new best friend and granddaughter, Queenie. And then she realizes that she's at Marie Laveau's place and she's like, Queenie, what's going on? And then Queenie immediately has like this light switch flip and she's like, all right, you dumb bitch, get in the cage. And I'm like, holy shit, where did this come from? Like, Queenie has shown like remorse, and like, it's been led up to now that like, oh yeah, like Queenie is kind of connecting with like Delphine. And I'm like, okay, well, this is now again a Queenie skill issue for not knowing what Delphine did, if that's all it took was knowing one thing.
She looked up the Axeman on Google. You know what I mean?
They were in a tour about Delphine when they found Delphine. She knows who Delphine is. They took a tour of her house and heard all of the shit that she did in that house.
Like, this really does feel like scene missing. Like, incredibly so. Because the last scene we get is of Queenie being like, hey, I didn't say I was gonna kill her. that's nuts. Like, I'm not doing that. What's wrong with you? And then the next scene is her being like, hey, yo, fuck this old bitch. Get her in a cage. Woo! And it's like, that's a big swing of emotion. Like, if she came forward as like a little penitent and a little bit like, okay, I'm doing it and I know it's the right thing to do, but I still don't feel great about it because they forced her to be a cute little old lady for about a week. Mm. You know, that would make a little bit more sense, but it really is just straight up. Like, I think she just straight up calls her like dumb bitch within like 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. Like,
with like extreme malice, which again, granted, that should be the attitude that everybody's had towards Delphine since episode one. And the only person who's really had that attitude has been Fiona, ironically.
It honestly just kind of nets out to making Queenie seem like a tiny bit dishonest almost, but for no reason. You know what I mean? Like, why did you like set up this little friendship with her if she is so terrible? Because then it means seems Queenie is like stupid, and then later, whatever, you know, whatever.
Also, it's just like, I don't know. I guess this is kind of a strike against the actress to some extent, but like, it probably more the directing, if I'm being perfectly honest. It's almost certainly the directing. But, like, this just doesn't feel in character for Queenie. Because, like, Queenie has been shown to be, like, willing to, like, you know, pop off at people a little bit. But never, like, just raw fucking malice out of nowhere like this. And it comes off as, like, wow, Queenie decided to be mean all of a sudden. It's one of those things where, like, even though her actions are justified and correct, as far as character writing goes, it very much feels like they shuffled Queenie out and brought in Queenie 2, and Queenie 2 is like just a different person who acts a little angrier than usual, which it's just weird. It's weird. It's out of character. But yeah, so they you know, throw her in all that, and then they lock her up in the torture room. And then they let Queenie cut Delphine open. Like, they're just straight up like, hey, you want first slice? And she's like, yup, I've been waiting forever. You know, it's like, what? What character is this?
Yeah.
And then in the worst, most BioShock Infinitian moment, they have Marie Laveau paint her face with Delphine's blood, doing the thing that is emblematic of all of Delphine's cruelty, and having her do it without a hint of irony, not even like a little bit of a, this is tongue in cheek. No, fully presented as like, see, the other side is just as like, no, they are not. No, they are not.
I've said it a lot. Bears repeating. Real people. They're equating
real slave owners than murderers.
Yes. They're equating real, like, Marie Laveau with an actual, like, horrific slave owner. Like, especially.
Yeah. They love it. They, American Horror Story loves making, they love making statements. Most of the time, the statements are bad and wrong, but they do love making them, like, with their whole chest.
Just, this one is, like, just so fucking deaf, right? Like, this is the most, like, you did it because you wanted to have a fun trope in your piece of media, but you didn't think about the implications for even a second. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's where the episode ends. And like the most
tune in next time.
I'm not gonna say it's the most fucked up part because it is just fucked up in general. But like the most fucked up thing about them using this as a narrative piece, this like book ending of like having her do the same thing, is like, Marie Laveau can't read minds, so like she doesn't know about Delphine making the baby into paste or whatever. That's something that Delphine just admitted to Queenie in this episode, and Queenie has not interacted with Marie Laveau since then. Why would Marie do this if it wasn't for us, the audience? Because Marie shouldn't hypothetically know that this happened.
Right, it's not even like an ironic.
The girl killed herself, so it's not like she told her story to somebody else. She killed herself, and the father of the baby was Delphine's husband, so it's not like he relayed that information to somebody.
I think the other biggest problem here is that even if Marie Laveau did know about the time she had done that in the past by, you know, like going through the house or whatever, Marie Laveau has a lot more traumatic, horrifying things that happened to her at the hands of Madame Delphine. So like, I think she would have more contrapasso punishments lined up, like right? turning her into a bull
yeah,
of some form
bull.
Or something yes. like that.
Yes.
Yeah. Like there, it's, yeah, it's just a total failure of the concept of contrapasso in exchange for, hey, audience, we just talked about this a few minutes ago, remember? Which is not as good as the writing of Dante, I find.
Yeah. But boy, howdy, are they sure proud of it? Because they, like, linger on this shot, and they make it all, like, cinematic, and they have her, like, paint very slowly as the camera slow zooms.
Liz, was this you or Sloby who wrote notes for this one?
I can't remember. First couple, but then notes mostly.
Half and half. Okay. It was okay. me.
Because, yeah, your end statement here is truly what this left me feeling, was I was like, wait, they're doing the, no, come on. And then they linger on it so long and zoom out that it truly is like the director turning to you and being like, is this anything? does this make you feel an emotion?
You should. I don't know what emotion you're supposed to feel. Is it bad for Delphine? Because that's wrong. Is it good for what's happening? Yeah. That's also wrong. So whatever you're feeling, it's wrong. But congratulations. We did it. We're glad to make you have felt that way. Because we did that on purpose. And that's where the episode ends.
Good grief.
Be ready.
I can only imagine that it gets infinitely worse from here. Like I said, yeah. I say that not as someone who hasn't seen it, because I've seen it. It's that every time I watch the show, especially these past few episodes, things that I had severely repressed came flooding back.
Yeah, a lot of strange B and C plots in this season, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I didn't like Coven. Like, I watched it a little more recently, and I'm like, maybe I was wrong. And then this starts like, that's right. That's right. I did have a reason.
Mm-hmm. And the next episode's title just has me quaking with dread, because it sounds, like, weirdly horny, and I don't like that, given what we've led up to this episode with. It's mm-hmm. The Sacred Taking.
Yep.
I'm just great. Always worried whenever they mention like a sacred taking, now that they've shown that like they love ghost pregnancy. They're like, ghost pregnancy is like a big deal and it's really bad.
And now we have two people who potentially, or actually three if you think about it, who potentially have demon coochie, who have a partner that now that won't die if they use their demon coochie. So who knows what will happen?
Yeah. On top of just a ghost.
I'm sure it will be so good and cool, and I'm sure we're all going to love it.
This is one of the longer seasons, right?
Yeah,
this is like a full, like, 13 episodes as opposed to, like, 10 or 11?
It's 13,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, so we still have, okay, so we're like, about halfway at this point. So, all right, that makes me feel better. For some reason in my heart, it was feeling like we were hitting the 80% done point of an American Horror Story season where they're like, uh-oh, time to dump plot. But I guess they just decided to do it in this episode. That or they're about to hit a breakneck pace for the next, like, 7 hours that I'm not sure I'll be able to fully comprehend.
I got some new... Yeah, there's a little more to go, let's say. You know, we're not wrapping anything up, really.
I'll just say, we haven't actually, like, hit the main plot of the season yet, really. Yeah. I'll just say, we're not there yet. We introduced it, but we're not actually to the main plot of the season yet.
See you next time.
Well, see you next time, everybody. Apparently, I don't know my ass from a hole in the ground. So. Till next time, everybody. Have a great one.
Bye.
Bye.